Hey, guess what? You found another edition of the LinuxInstall.net podcast. This is episode number 106, recorded on Tuesday, April 15th, 2014. On this week's episode, we're going to talk about DevOps. Is it killing developers? Oh, wait. I think he means it's killing like the title developer and, you know, people want full stacks. Well, anyways, you'll have to listen to find out. And we're also going to talk about the fact that both Greg and I are going to try to be speakers at different events. Well, actually, I might try to hone in on his thunder over at the OLF one, but we're both doing presentation stuff, so we'll talk a little bit about that. And let's get on with the podcast. Our hangout is now live,
I think. It is?
Looks like
it. Says live.
Okay. This is the LinuxInstall.net podcast. We are Brian Wagner and Greg Martin tonight.
Tomorrow night, I will be Brian Wagner.
And I'll be Greg Martin.
Absolutely.
Then it'll feel like you got four times the co-hosts.
Anyway. We'll clone ourselves.
Clone ourselves. There we go. This is episode number 106, and we're going to talk about stuff.
Yes.
DevOps is killing developers. Yeah, we'll get back to that. Anyways, what'd you do this week, Greg?
So can I just make mention, I'm looking here on my Fedora box.
Yeah?
And there's... I have it on a laptop because it's what I do all my development on. And I use IntelliJ, and it has the horizontal and the vertical scrolling for the source files. I can't find a way to disable horizontal scrolling on the trackpad because that's really, really annoying to me.
You know what I do?
What's that?
I just turn off my trackpad and use a mouse.
I don't have an extra mouse.
I actually have a script somewhere that actually will go in and make sure that if the mouse is connected, it disconnects it. Shell scripting at its finest.
Yes, I should probably invest in a USB mouse for this thing. I don't know. I don't like carrying – I already carry enough crap around as it is with me on a daily basis. I don't – you know, adding a mouse to that's quite detrimental, really.
I know, because I know it's definitely not the cost, because they're like $12 now. So
I did go to Walmart, get a stupid little like Logitech M130 or something like that. But no, like I said, I carry two laptops, a tablet, phone. You know, I've got a book on me occasionally. You know,
I understand, and I'm carrying this because I like trackballs.
Oh, I want one of those.
This is actually not that bad. It's like $50. It works really well with Linux. So. Not that I actually couldn't tell you the last time I had a problem with a mouse in Linux, but
if I install Elementary OS on this, it doesn't like my trackpad. Like really? It renders it almost completely useless.
Huh.
And I've never figured out why. But then again, I can't move the mouse around enough with the trackpad to figure it out. So it's kind of just like, what the hell?
See, and like I said, I have a script that specifically looks to see if there is a mouse or, in my case, trackball connected, and then it disables the touchpad because I hate the touchpad on a laptop because I like touchpads in general, but on laptops, I think they're absolutely useless because I know how to touch type, and I move my hands on the keypad mm-hmm. where the touchpad is, and all of a sudden, I am seven lines down because I touched and it thought I wanted to tap and go there. It wasn't my finger, it was my palm right here. Right there touching. Not a finger.
See, I like this trackpad though because it supports multi-touch gesturing.
So does this one. That actually makes it worse for me personally. But
well, see, my Wacom tablet actually supports multi-touch gesturing as well. So I was – because you can actually double up and use it as a trackpad too. So
mine is so old, I'm not sure. I know it supports pressure sensitivity, but I don't know if it supports multi-touch. That's how old my Wacom tablet is. But it does everything I need it to do, so I'm not complaining. I don't want to buy another one.
They're nice and cheap. the good ones are anyways.
Well, I know what else you did this week that you didn't even bring up, so.
Oh, you mean the whole submission?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I wasn't even going to mention that because I didn't even know anything. Yeah, I submitted.
Well, no, I'm only asking you to mention it because, you know, if people actually like you and would like to hear you talk more about specifically your topic.
Who does that? No, I'm an idiot. No, just...
they can go out and I think they can comment on your submission.
Yeah, I think they can too. I didn't take a look. We're jumping ahead. So this year, the Ohio Linux Fest, they moved it to October instead of September, which I thought was really strange. But I submitted a proposal for a talk at this year's fest, and it's going to be basically a introduction to doing Android development on Linux. So it's basically geared towards people who either haven't done it before or have done it on Windows or another platform and kind of want to see what it's done like on Linux and all the benefits of doing it on Linux. You know, I'm not going to do code samples or anything else like that. Just, you know, here's how I have my environment set up. Here's what you can expect if you try to do it on your own and getting you up and going so you can start doing Android coding on a Linux machine. Proposal was submitted, what, last week or the week before? Yeah. They're not going to be making it. Yeah, they put it up and they were like, you know, call for presentations. And I was like, okay, let's just go for it. And
then you looked and saw that they're not due until the 24th of July.
Yeah, so I'm like, oh, shit. But,
you know, and I should give them feedback on this. There is a problem with giving everybody that much time. And that is that, like I did last year, I went, oh, I got plenty of time. And I kept looking at that date, and it was so far out, I had plenty of time. And then all of a sudden, the next thing I knew, oh, crud, I've got like 2 days to write this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think they leave it open for people who, you know, want to submit but kind of need time to think of something. But, I mean, if they're not looking for a deadline until July, I mean, you could push that a little closer.
Oh, you can. No, I'm thinking you can push the opening.
Well,
I'm just
talking
about pushing the opening date. Don't open it up until, I don't know, June or May, you know, middle of May.
Yeah, so I would imagine it's going to be a while before I hear back as to whether or not I'm actually going to be able to do this or not. But it's going to be a little jive for me because this will be the first, if I do get it, this will be the first actual talk at a conference I've ever given. So, yeah, that'll be interesting, to say the least. But
cool.
I mean, the few people that I have had, well, I say a few people, but there have been quite a few people that have seen that I've been thinking about doing this, and I've actually got quite a bit of support already. So not that that lends weight to a decision at the board at OLF or anything like that, but it would be really cool to get that and then have a decent turnout for it.
Yeah. I think you'll get a decent turnout there.
I just didn't see anybody doing that last year when we went, and I don't know if that's something that people just try to avoid in general or if we really just don't have that many Android programmers around this area.
I don't know. I've seen other talks about Android development. I don't know if it was the way you're going to – like the way you're approaching it is – I don't want to say it's unique. I mean, it's the way you need to present it.
Right.
Given what you're trying to do. But I don't remember ever seeing anybody. There wasn't anything really Android related at the conference last year, which I thought was kind of weird.
No.
Especially since, you know, John was there talking about Ubuntu Touch, which is a good topic and very Linux appropriate. But it was funny that they would talk about the one that's not released yet, but not talk about the one that's on the majority of phones.
The one that's on the phone that you have to put Ubuntu Touch on in the first place.
Yes. But, you know, I'm not bitter or anything, but they stopped supporting my version of the phone that I'd put it on. Not only did they not support my phone because it was on Verizon and therefore only had CDMA radios, no GSM radios, but then they just flat out stopped supporting the Google Nexus phone. So
I kind of lost track of what all devices they were supporting with that. I stopped playing with Ubuntu Touch a while ago.
Now,
I
mean,
you see all this activity on Google Plus. I mean, because, you know, Popey and Jono are always putting up stuff from like these developer challenges and all this other kind of stuff. And I mean, it looks cool, but I just lost interest in it too long ago to even try to pick it back up again.
I think it's cool. It's great that they're actually spending the time to do it. I think they need to do it as a company. Mm-hmm. And I think Linux really does need something like it. So I'm really happy to see them continuing to do it. I'm just waiting to see somebody pick up the OS and actually put it on hardware. And I their hardware specs are pretty high. So they're going to have a pretty high-end phone. And that's kind of never been Linux's strong suit. Like we as a community have always gone, you can put it on anything. This phone is going to require if my Galaxy Nexus isn't supported, it's going to require some serious horsepower.
See, I wonder how it runs on the Nexus. Well, I would say Nexus 5. And B, yeah. I wonder how those specs, because I don't even remember. I wonder how those specs were comparative to the Edge. So I think the Edge was actually a really beefy device, if I remember right.
The one they were trying to build, yes.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that was a stupid beefy device.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
So, yeah, I mean, and as far as I know, there really isn't, aside from like the new Tegra processors, I don't see a phone that powerful. But
cool. So what else? Is that all you've been up to this week?
Yeah,
well, just trying to... not a lot, but
well, yeah. I mean, I was telling you before, even if I don't get the talk at OLF, I'm probably still wanting to do something with that idea. So I'm still kind of nurturing it and taking care of it as long as I can. And really, that's about it. Just made my jump back to Fedora on my laptop, and I feel so much better now. I feel like a crack addict that finally got his fix.
And like we were talking about before, they need to pretty it up a bit.
What's wrong with GNOME 3?
They need to spend a little time making it pretty. It needs to be prettier.
They need to.
I have a really high resolution screen, and I don't want to see blocky graphics on my high resolution screen.
Like I said before, the only problem I have is the font rendering. I think GNOME could do a better job with that. But overall, I love the theme, the style of it, and I like the whole, you know, dynamic workspaces. That's a really big plus for me. So I'm very much a one window, two workspace kind of guy. So
really?
Yeah, I don't use Alt Tab for shit.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, even if I do, I will install the GNOME extension that limits Alt Tab to the current workspace instead of having it global.
Yeah. Yeah. I quit using I'm the opposite. I quit using workspaces and went to just Alt Tabbing on one screen because for some reason, and I know it's a setting and I just didn't feel like figuring out what it was, but if I would go to the edge of the screen, I'd all of a sudden end up in the next workspace. And I couldn't seem to figure out how to, like, I was losing functionality because I kept going to the other workspace and not having to click back.
You mean like if you were dragging your cursor over to a screen or something, like over to the corner of the screen?
Yeah, well, I'm using dual monitors.
Oh.
Because the monitors aren't the same size resolution-wise, I think it's getting confused. And if I go across where they're not the same size from the monitor, the one monitor to the other.
Well,
because it's technically hitting the edge, even though it's really not. It's really going to the other monitor, but
yeah,
it kept flipping me to the other workspace because it thought that's where I wanted to go, but it wasn't where I wanted to go. I wanted to just go to the screen to the right.
Yeah, they'll sometimes do goofy things. Like if, and this is only from my experience with Fedora, like if you have a multi-monitor set up, they usually only provide workspaces on the primary display. You can't have the workspaces on both, but it's typically on the primary. And then when you actually go to align the displays in the display setting, like where, you know, display 2 is as opposed to display 1, it only locks to the top bottom corners. Like you can't just put a monitor in the center between the two like you can on Windows, which is actually really nice because it's more accurate for how you would slide a window over or something like that. I definitely don't have a problem with it though.
Yeah. Yeah. But see, I'm an alt tabber mostly because I have to flip between Linux and Windows. So I have to do the alt tab thing in Windows because I don't really have a choice.
My grandpap was an alt tabber, so I'm an alt tabber.
Yeah, basically. So I never got used to them. I mean, I love having the multiple workspaces. I can't say never. When I was using it at work, when I worked at where Joe works, I had dual monitors and I had monitoring screens on one set of on one workspace would be all my web pages that were monitoring things. Mm-hmm. And then I would switch to the other workspace to actually do work. So I could quick switch just to check stuff or check where, you know,
see, now
the HTML pages for the web pages for all the monitoring solutions.
Speaking of switching, did you ever flip back and forth between the virtual terminals? Like alt, like what is it? Control alt F2, F3 for the different. Yeah. I don't do that.
I mean, I don't do it on my workstation.
I don't do it, period.
That's what you're asking.
Yeah.
I also install GPM, which do you even know what GPM is?
Yeah.
Okay. For those who don't know, GPM, because it's not installed by default anymore.
Yeah.
It annoys the hell out of me every time, but that's okay. It's not that big a deal to install. GPM is the mouse basically in a command line environment. I can't stand not having it because it then gives you the ability to copy and paste. So if you don't have it, you can't copy and paste. So I always install it. But yeah, I'll do alt tab and GPM in some releases. I don't know if it's all of them, but in some releases, if you do that control alt between them, GPM actually keeps your clipboard as you're flipping between.
Oh, wow.
If it's your user, like if you switch from you to root between terminals, it doesn't do it. But if it's you to you, it does it. So I think it's caching it somewhere actually.
That's cool. I didn't know it did that.
I didn't either. It was a happy accident when I had
it. Happy accident is the best ones.
Made me very happy when I didn't have to type that really long string of stuff I needed to type.
It was probably, it was a regex, wasn't it?
Yeah. Anyways. So
what'd you do, man?
What did I do? I was playing with a bunch of DevOpsy stuff. I started playing with Web2Py again. It's a Python framework that actually has an IDE in the browser. So you can do all your editing in a web browser. You don't have to have a full IDE separate. It will store all the files together. It will create basically everything will stay together and you can pick it up and move it, except for the database, which of course you'd be connecting to and you have to do all the normal database stuff. But right. If you're not connecting to a database or if you're only using an SQLite database, you can keep everything with the app and makes the app really portable and easy to move around. I use it because it's pretty simple to write quick like SOAP requests or SOAP responders. So I can emulate that without having to have the whole Microsoft stack to do it. Because I'm really not a fan of Visual Studio, which would do it for me, but man, it's really,
yeah, I love really those ones. Eclipse will do it for you too. If you feel like hating yourself.
And I tend to spend a lot of time. Well, I was specifically doing Python stuff. So I was spending a lot of time flipping between IDEs as it was and having to switch to Visual Studio. Visual Studio supposedly does Python, but I couldn't figure out how to make it work.
It's a nice plugin.
Yeah. PyCharms to the rescue. I love JetBrains, which you were talking about before we started. Yes,
they make amazing, amazing IDEs.
Yes, they do. So I was playing with that stuff and just doing some other development. Like quick development stuff, nothing really major. I did some upgrades. I upgraded my wireless router. I don't know if we were talking about that on air or not last week, but Walt had talked me into trying the Merlin firmware for the router that he and I both have. We have the Asus RT-N66U. And the benefit of the Merlin one is that it looks pretty much stock, except that he's fixed some bugs that Asus hasn't bothered to fix yet. And he's added a few features, just a few. Nothing major.
So this Web2Py web framework, is this what you were talking about?
Yes.
Okay, so I was looking up on my tablet.
Yes, Whipped Pie. So if somebody's looking for a neat way to learn how to develop, it's actually a web framework. It's pretty simple to set up. It's not simple like you can't do stuff with it. Simple. It's simple like it's easy to use. It's pretty simple in that respect. And I will put a link in the show notes.
That looks pretty cool. My buddy Derek's a real big Python programmer. I should run this by him and see if he's used it before.
I would be surprised if he hadn't, because it comes up a lot. Because it's that whole web stack altogether.
Okay.
So there's a lot of tutorials that teach you how to program with it. Because you don't have to download any specific IDE, they can show you in the IDE and WebDepi how to develop so that you're not trying to execute their stuff in different things. It has a very unique way to think about how to build a web app, so it may not fit most people's needs. But all right, I'm going to move on. Greg, did you know that I also submitted talks somewhere? Not to OLF yet. I still have to do my talk submission for OLF.
But no, Brian, where did you submit a talk to?
I submitted not one, but two. So when I was looking at this, it's for DevOps Days in Pittsburgh, which is the end of May. I should hear the end of this week. But DevOps Days, basically it's a DevOps conference about how to do developer operations stuff, which is my thing, and I'm doing the DevOpsMastery.com thing, so go check me out there. But I put in two topics because I didn't see anybody writing up proposals for them, but they said they wanted them. One is a proposal on convincing your team that you should do DevOps. And the other one is on, okay, we've decided to do DevOps. Now what do we do? Basically.
Yeah, which I saw that. Actually, I remember you showing me that draft, and when I was reading it, I kind of got confused because I thought it was all the same thing. And I'm like, wait a minute. And then I forgot they were actually broken up.
That they were separate?
Yeah. So, I mean, I am a moron.
Thanks, man.
And you're welcome. That's what I do.
Several of my friends, including you, help me edit the stuff.
That's what I'm here for, man.
Yeah. Where the heck did it go? I will put a link in the show notes. If anybody listening would help me out and make some comments. Where the hell did it go? I'll have to find it again. I will put links in the show notes to my two talks that I proposed. Whichever one you guys think is better, then definitely make a comment and say, hey, you should let Brian talk about this because I would appreciate it and it would probably help. Although Greg and I were talking before the show, and the guy that's leading this wonderful project is actually a chef employee, the chef company, the people that make DevOpsy stuff. And the ChefConf is going on in San Francisco right now. So I'm really not sure why he decided this was the week to try to figure out who should do presentations and who shouldn't. But hey, more power to him. Maybe it's because there's going to be a bunch of people together out at ChefConf. I don't know.
Well, it's just, you know, it's not like OLF when they want submissions like 300 months in advance of the freaking.
I didn't mean to give them too hard a time. I just, you know, they could shorten it.
You've got a valid point. I mean, the conference isn't until October, you know, so, but whatever, you know.
Well, but I understand the wanting to have your talks determined by July.
Correct.
That makes sense. But I'm just saying, don't open them. I mean, they opened, what, April 1st or some? Relatively,
yeah.
April sometime. It was either, pretty quick.
Yeah, well, I mean, they put up the CFP for, like, I think it was up for 3 days, and then I was all over it.
Right.
And now I'm just going to be stewing. But
until whatever. July 24th when you'll actually get a response.
Hey, I already got him to ding me on Twitter, so.
You did. I saw that. I was very proud of you.
Yes, I instantly took to my social networking skills and was like, hey, look what I did. And they were like, yes, thank you. Now leave us alone until July.
Yeah. We'll get back to you in July.
That's pretty much what it was.
Which is why you got the really nice response. Like, nobody else is going to get, you know, nobody who writes anything like the 5th of July is going to get anything anywhere near as nice. It's going to be like, yeah, now there's all these submissions coming in like crazy because all these people.
Oh, I know. But yeah, I mean, it's cool. It's cool that they noticed, and you know, at least, like I said, I've already got, you know, I got support from some people for this, and they at least know I'm there, so I'm on radar. So.
Well, and they, I will give them credit too. They also responded faster than IBM did to me.
They got back to me just about as quick as Squarespace did whenever Joe and I were having issues. Posted on Twitter, and that within like 3 hours they were there.
Yep.
So. Mad kudos.
All right, let's stop talking about submitting talks because nobody wants to hear that. They want to hear the talks. That's what you should want to hear. Just remember that we're doing the talks. You want to hear the talks. You got to tell us which ones to do. Well, at least tell me which one to do at DevOps Days, and come if you're going to come.
Yeah, and if you tell me what to do, I'm just going to ignore you. So there we go.
Pretty much what he does to me, folks. Just so you know.
Yeah, it's not an exclusive thing. I ignore everybody.
Yeah, don't feel bad. That's all I'm trying to say. So our topic of the night, since it's just Greg and I, we were talking about trying to come up with some developer-y thing because that's kind of what both of us do. And Greg came across this article by Jeff Nupp. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly.
Jeff Nupp.
And Jeff, wow, has some opinions. They are his opinions. I'm not ripping on his opinions. I'm disagreeing with his opinions when I say anything contradictory to what he says. I'm not ripping on him. He's fully capable, and he deserves his opinions. He's been in the industry, I think I figured out, for about 9 years, maybe, roughly.
Got somewhere around there, 9, 10.
Got out of school in 2005.
It's kind of got my experience, sort of, all these years.
Yeah.
Number of years, anyways.
His blog post is How DevOps is Killing the Developer, which I almost laughed just at the title, just going, really? It's killing the developer? Isn't DevOps really supposed to be enhancing the number of developers we have? Reading through the article, it's very interesting, and we're going to pick it apart here in a minute, but it's very interesting. Reading the comments, though, by far was much better than actually yelling about the article. It calmed me down because there were a lot of people going, really? I don't think you understand what DevOps is supposed to be.
So to preface, Brian kind of staggered through this a little bit. I mean, I read it at work and I thought it was an interesting read. But when I said, you know, Brian, hey, you got to check this out. And he was reading it before the show. He kind of staggered through it 3 or 4 times. And then he was really aggravated. I was like, just wait, man, read the comments. You're good. Yeah. Saber babies.
Yeah. It's only at the time of us recording this, it's only been out for, it looks like 7 or 8 hours.
And look how many people it's pissed off.
Yeah, it pissed off a whole bunch of people. Almost as many as I pissed off with the fact that scripters should be more like developers.
Oh, no.
I know how it feels. I'm just saying. Mine was mostly because people weren't reading my article. They were just writing comments about my title. So I did prove the fact that if you write a decent title, that people will not only react to it, but comment about it.
I'm going to experiment with that soon.
Yeah. So I think he's confusing a few things in this article. He's trying to say that DevOps is killing the job of just a straight-up developer, like developer and do nothing else. Not really. I don't think that's really the goal. The goal is to get developers and operations to work together along with their partners in QA, which they're already pretty much both working with QA. I think this every place I've been, QA was always kind of the go-between. It actually kind of calmed people down and played middle child, as it were.
The mediator.
The mediator. It's the classic middle child mediator. going, okay, look, I don't care that you're ticked off that he didn't, you know, bow down and kiss your feet or whatever, and you didn't do whatever you were supposed to do for him. You guys both have to talk to each other because we have to get this out. Yep. That kind of stuff. That's where the QA people usually fall. So. But DevOps, he makes some good points in here. I don't want to say he doesn't. Oops. I don't want to say he doesn't make good points in here. He does. Some of them are just a little crazy. Some of them I don't understand. Looking at his job history on LinkedIn, assuming that we are looking at the right person, which it seems like we are, but assuming we're looking at the right person, I'm really not sure. Where he worked that it was like this that he's describing. Maybe it's the .com. Well, he's not really working for a .com. I mean, if like I said, if we have found the right person, he's working for AppNexus. So it's not really a true.com. He's working on the data team, but yet most of the article complains about having to do DBA work, which I was like, well, you're writing code about data, so needing to know the database is pretty important.
But I'm a developer. I don't need to know the database.
Right. Why do I have to know the database? I have worked with developers like that. What do you mean I have to know how the database works? I'm not saying you got to be a DBA, but you got to know the basics. Same with the whole stack. You know, he talks about a full stack developer. First of all, that's a misnomer. I don't think anybody can truly be a full stack master of all domains. And anybody who's sitting there arguing with me right now saying, you're full of it, Wagner, you don't know, I can. No, you can't, because you just, there isn't enough hours in the day to master all of the domains.
Well, your brain's not built to master that kind of stuff. I mean, you may get really, really good at one or two things, but there's no way in hell you're going to be that good at everything.
Yeah.
No way.
It took me a long time to learn everything I have about how OSs work and how network stacks work and how network things interoperate. And I didn't do it by myself. I had lots of people who were much smarter than me in each of those domain areas, all helping to teach me and raise me up. And at the same time, I was teaching them stuff. You know, this is how the web works. This is how this works. That works. Whatever they weren't, you know, totally up on. And that's kind of the way most people learn, I think. I understand when he's talking about small companies, what's funny is he talks about a team, a development team of seven. At the point where you got a development team of seven, you probably have at least one person who really digs working on databases and one that really digs working on system administration tasks, and hopefully somebody doing QA. I had to laugh because he really thinks that developers are good at QA. And I will say they're good at QA of other people's stuff, but they are horrible at QA of their own. And that's not a rip on developers in general. That is just a rip on humans. We miss what we miss because, you know, when we don't code for something, it's because we didn't think of doing it that way. Like, why would you do something that way?
And user stories don't help there either.
No. So
anybody that tells me, because I've heard that argument six or seven times, I'm telling you, I write user stories. They don't help in that department. They do not do that. Because you're not the guy using the program, so you can't possibly write a user story to fully cover what he's going to be doing with it.
You can't make anything idiot-proof because idiots are just too damn ingenious. Idiots will always come up with some way to do something you never, ever thought was possible. I've watched developers do things, and I looked at them and went, what made you think that was a good idea? Really? What are you smoking, and why aren't you sharing? That's all I want to know. Because that, you know, and then you explain to them why it's a bad idea, and they're like, oh, I didn't really think about that. Yeah, that is a really horrible idea. Let me go fix that.
There's an interesting thing from that is when you let your developers operate in a vacuum, right, when they don't have a Q&A, that's where a lot of that happens at.
Yeah, and he's defending waterfall methodology, which is where that kind of thing can happen the most or should be happening. Mm-hmm. If you're doing the agile stuff, it shouldn't happen. I'm not a huge fan of agile for infrastructure. Agile works well for development. It doesn't work necessarily well for some parts of Agile work, but most parts of Agile don't work for infrastructure. They work really well for development or a mix of, you know, where development and infrastructure interconnect, Agile's fine. If you try to do an entire infrastructure project in an Agile methodology, it just doesn't work. Because the user cases are just too varied and you'd have too many of them. Mm-hmm. And you need to break things out and do things in a different way. And it's not really waterfall either. It looks more like waterfall, but it's not really waterfall. And it's not really, you know, Scrum might work, but I don't remember enough about Scrum to remember the exact rules of Scrum.
I don't either.
But he's like the development test release cycle is seen as broken. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. Did you not understand how Agile works? Because there's still the development.
You have that. That's the core of Agile. It's just faster.
It's just, yeah. I mean, waterfall is you create a big, large number of things. You develop the big, large number of things. You test the big, large number of things. You release it. And Agile is you develop the big, long list. You pick the minimum viable product, basically, and then you just keep iterating, adding the pieces that everybody says you need next, and you just keep iterating and iterating and iterating.
So instead of milestones being released, you have, you know, patches being released onto the versioning instead of, you know, here we have this monolithic patch and it increases the whole version by one, you know, but the core is still the same, you know, that doesn't change, at all.
And that's why Agile doesn't really work for infrastructure, because you can't, you know, you either install the upgrade or you don't. Mm-hmm. You can't install part of the OS upgrade. You can't install part of the WebSphere upgrade or part of the WebLogic or Oracle or insert anything else in there. You can't install
an Oracle upgrade. That sounds good. That sounds fantastic. Let's do it.
You know, or I'm just going to update the OS, but I'm not going to bother updating Java. Well, why would you not do both? And, you know, maybe things don't break. Maybe you do have to do that. There are legitimate reasons why you can't move to a specific version of Java.
Oh, legacy jars or even wars, you know.
Well, and I don't remember which one it was, whether it was 4 to 5, 5 to 6, one of those two. They, like, deprecated the use of certain things that, like, were really commonly used. They were like, to move the language forward, we've got to kill this stuff. So you're just going to have to change it.
Oh, I think that was 5 to 6.
Was it 5 to 6?
Yeah.
And it was a huge ordeal for companies with a lot of Java code, because you had to go back through and modify. It wasn't a huge modification. Like, I don't remember anybody complaining about how long it took, other than you now had to test all of your Java applications to make sure, and you had to do complete tests instead of just testing functional areas. Mm. You had to do a full functional test to make sure everything worked, which is a pain.
Yeah.
Such is life. But, yeah.
Shit happens.
He worked, if, like I said, if we found the right guy on LinkedIn, he worked for two huge companies where I know nobody was letting him do DevOps the way he's describing it, which is full stack, what he calls a full stack developer. There's no one at Wells Fargo that is a full stack developer by what I would consider a full stack, what he considers a full stack developer. And the other one was Goldman Sachs, and I'm pretty sure they didn't let him do it. They're just too large an organization.
That's a security violation for those people.
Well, especially, yeah, actually for both of those.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to let somebody dribble into certain tiers where they're not supposed to be at. If you're in dev, you're fucking staying there.
Right.
You know? Well,
you will only have the access that you need.
Right.
This is something that I have a hard time, you know, developers always, as a sysadmin, developers always want me to have, or to give them root access on the production servers. To which I laugh maniacally and make other people laugh in the room because I'm laughing so hard. Like, no, you're never getting it. Don't ask again. Tell me what you need, and I'll give you access to whatever you need. But you're not getting root because that's not your responsibility anymore. Mm-hmm. If you have a proper organization or a proper separation of duties, which you're supposed to have, I'm a CISSP, so I have these security things that are ingrained and beaten into me and, you know, had to take the test. It's really long. It's really hard. A big part of the test is this whole separation of duties things. Like, I'm not supposed to do things. Like, I shouldn't write code.
What is that like? What is that? The principle of least privilege or something like that?
Yes, that's one.
I think that's what I keep going back to.
Right. So, you know, you just shouldn't be. You know, this whole full stack developer thing, that he's concept that he's talking about. You shouldn't be allowed to do that. Somebody should take the role of developer, somebody should take the role of DBA, somebody should take the role of operations at a minimum. Mm-hmm. You may split out even further. You may combine some of those roles. That all somewhat works. But when you go to production, the only people that should be doing anything in production are the people that have to support that. And in my opinion, the people that are going to call at 1 o'clock in the morning. And I've had more developers tell me that I can call them at 1 o'clock in the morning, but the thing that happens when you call a developer at 1 o'clock in the morning is that they're generally asleep. and not hearing their phone, or back in the days of pagers, oh, my pager was in the base or was in the on the kitchen table, or their phone was on the kitchen table. That's the current one. And I'm like, okay, well, so I spent half my night trying to figure out what your code was doing because you told me I could call you instead of actually having something documented, you know? I mean, I've sent people, I've made, well, the manager didn't live that far away, but I made a manager one time go over and knock on the guy's door.
I bet that guy was pissed.
Well, the manager was already pretty pissed, so that's why he agreed to do it. But the manager was totally ticked off. He's like, I know where he lives. And I was trying to keep the manager from doing it, and then finally I was like, you know what? Yeah, he is pissing me off. Go get him.
Oh, no.
At 2 o'clock in the morning, his manager's knocking on his door, and he's coming. I think his wife answered the door. She's like, she knew him, luckily. She's like, okay, why are you here? And he goes, because you're not answering the phone. And then she's like,
oh.
Well, we turn our phones off at night. Your husband's not allowed.
he gave the okay. Keep it on.
Yep. So, yeah. So it should be a separation, and it is a security violation to really do it the way he's talking about. I have never met anybody who is good enough at all the areas, all the domain areas, that they could even be what he's talking about. That is not to say that I have not gotten more than my fair share of requests to be a WebSphere developer, administrator, systems admin for the Linux systems that they're running on, and Windows admin for the Windows systems that they're also running WebSphere on. So, you know, here, do all these things. And to every one of them, I go, no, I'm not applying. I'm not talking to you. I don't know. That's just dumb. You don't respect me if you think I'm going to try to do 6 different jobs. Not to say you won't ask me to do 2 or 3. Those are fine, but I'm not doing all the jobs. I'm not being the developer and the administrator and all that other stuff. He goes on to talk about a lot about he's very frustrated at his job. It's pretty obvious. very frustrated, which I can totally get behind, and I completely understand, not in my current job in this respect, but I've been in this position where I'm just like, you know, quit it. Quit asking me for this stuff. This is dumb. Most of the Linux install posts were written out of that, if anybody hadn't figured that out yet. But he's talking about, you know, constraining resources or constrained resources. A lot of what he's talking about as being a full stack developer, I disagree with him only in the fact that I have met developers that are writing web applications that don't understand how the HTTP protocol works. Like, they couldn't explain to me the communications that happens in an HTTP request if their lives depended on it. And I'm going, if you can't understand that, how do you know that you're making the right request?
Right.
Like, you know, really, should you be doing a get, or should you be doing a put, or should you be doing a post, or an update, or a delete? Which one should you be doing? Do you know which one to use when? Because if you don't, then that's a pretty basic thing. I'm not asking them to understand all the nuances of the OSI model. The fact that I happen to understand that is more because I hung out with a lot of network guys. But, and they got tired of explaining things to me, so they made me understand it. Like, I could go past the CCNA pretty easily, or whatever the equivalent is now. It used to be the CCNA because they've changed all their
I think it's CCN. Well, no, I think it's CCNA and then CCNP.
So, but what was funny to me and what really got me going that I told you about.
There we go.
Was referring to anyone not a developer as the quote-unquote lower roles. I'm sorry. I am not a lower role. I am your peer or possibly your superior. Given that I have 17 years of experience, I'm probably your superior. Well, actually, almost 20 years of experience. I'm probably your superior. Mostly because I've worked with some really good developers who were of my own age group or older, who have taught me what developers should and shouldn't do and showed me actual code problems that they were fixing for younger developers and where the problem was, just because I asked and I wanted to understand it. So, yeah, calling these other roles, calling DBAs and sysadmins lower roles is pretty insulting. And to put it in quotes and bold was really, you know, just saying lower roles would have been bad enough, but you had to put it in quotes and
damn syntax, damn styling.
Like, really?
Well, the thing I think he forgets is that, you know, the whole thing, and this kind of goes back to, I think, what we're trying to say is that, you know, DevOps is a meshing, not a mashing. And
right.
It's, yeah, you can be a developer, but if you don't have those other roles and you're not working in tandem, you're pretty much turning back into that developer that does everything, which is what he's bitching about in the first place.
Right. Well, and yeah, that's
I mean, they're just as important as the developer.
Yeah, and I think he's suffering too. I'm just going out on a limb here. I really don't know. I don't know this person. I think he's suffering too from non-technical management, trying to manage technical people. So people who aren't technical, who don't understand the technical stuff, trying to manage technical people. It rarely works. The only time I have seen it work, the person who was managing who wasn't technical really had wanted to be technical and was willing to take the time to learn what the technical, learn the differences, the nuances. But more often than not, the non-technical managers that I've seen seem to think that you can just walk in and it's just like any other job and, you know, well, I can just pick Sally up, who is a developer, and make her a DBA tomorrow. And Joe, who's a sysadmin, yeah, he can go develop tomorrow, right?
He wrote a couple.
It's all computers.
He wrote a couple bash scripts. I mean, yeah, you know, he can do our infrastructure code.
And I've had managers. I've not personally had them. I've had to work with them, and I have more than once said, "Let's go to lunch," and then explained over lunch why they were being stupid without telling them. You're being dumb. This is a really dumb idea. You're really pissing off your team. And if you'd like to stay their lead, and you don't want them to go hang you, you're going to change the way that you do things. But he definitely sounds like the team he's on now isn't as it might also be that he's so used to that siloed thing that he's not comfortable having to wear even if he's not wearing the full hat, if he's not comfortable wearing partial hats and understanding the basics.
Right.
Because I've seen more than a few developers that were just so isolated and got so used to being so siloed that, you know, well, I don't have to worry about the network. That's somebody else's problem. And at any level, like, I don't have to understand it all. I tried to connect. It failed. Okay, that's a network issue. Really?
You don't want to, like, take just 5 seconds and figure it out, you know?
Well, and it's not just – actually, and I'm picking on developers kind of unfairly. I've had sysadmins tell me, well, I can't ping. If I can't ping the default route, then it must be the network.
Really? We have that problem where I work at, and it's very, very annoying.
Are you sure you got the network cable connected? Before you call the network guys and they come yelling at me as your tech lead and go, why didn't you make them check to see if the network cable was connected? Go check and make sure the network cable is connected. Or if it's a virtual machine, make sure that the network interface is active and connected. And, you know, more than once the answer was, oh, that was the problem. Yeah, well, that would be why you couldn't ping anything, because you didn't have a network.
So that brings up an interesting – so you figure, like, do you think if people get too high level and stay there, they kind of forget about that lower level stuff, even though they shouldn't?
If they get too high level, like me, you mean?
Well, no, like if they just
talk about management.
No, just in management. Like if they just get drowned out and what they, yeah.
Yes.
I feel like they do, and
I think that it's we are in an industry that moves so quickly. I think the problem is that stuff just moves too fast, and you can't keep up.
Right.
So as long as you can keep up, you're okay. But it's hard to keep up if you're not doing it every day. You know, if your job is now 90% writing up reviews, development plans, going to meetings, defending your team for why they're, you know, they're already working 60 hours, 70 hours a week, well, 70, 80 hours a week, and you want them to take on another 20 hours worth of work, where are they supposed to do that? Those kind of things tend to happen quite often.
Yeah, politics will kill you.
Yeah, and you know, the only, I don't know, I think you're right. I think they just get put in a position where they don't have the opportunity anymore. And since you don't have the opportunity, you don't keep up. And since you can't keep up, they keep up basically. I've had more than a few managers think they knew more than they did too. So, you know, try not to tell your boss that he doesn't really know everything he thinks he knows. Or you just explain why you take a slightly off tack and explain to them why that they didn't really know what they were talking about.
That's why an email. That's why a tactful email with photos helps in that case.
Yeah, you got to watch those emails. They get misconstrued a lot.
That's why I said tactful email with photos.
Yes. But anyways, his article, I hope people don't think that about DevOps. I really hope that's not what most people think about DevOps, because that just really bums me out, because that's not what it is. It's developers and operations coming together and helping each other to automate and make things move faster. And no, not every company should do Agile. There are some parts of Agile that just kick ass, and yes, you should do them. You should automate. You should create as many unit tests as you can, or as it makes sense. You should create as many automated functional tests as makes sense and you can. But you have to strike a balance, and you do still need testers to actually go in and test stuff. So that's all. I don't want to pick on him too hard. He's got some other misconceptions that, you know, if I could talk to him, that'd be fine. But he is definitely a developer, not a DevOps person.
We've already beat up on him enough.
Yeah. So anyways, that does it for this week, I think. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean,
we're way over time, so.
Yeah, we just demolished the whole time thing. Half hour.
We're doing very good. We've been trying to do 30 minutes. We haven't done one less than 45, so.
Nope.
Yeah. For some reason, now that we, yeah, anyways.
There's no excuse for it.
There isn't. In conclusion, you can follow us on the Twitters as at Linux Install. You can follow us on our Google Plus community. We're linuxinstall.net, plus.google.com/linuxinstall.net. You can, of course, go to linuxinstall.net, just the website, and find all those things there, links there. Everything else, Twitter. You can follow us on Facebook too. I've lost faith in Facebook ever helping us do anything, so I'm not putting any effort in there. So you're going to want to follow Google Plus or Twitter, which is where we spend our time communicating. Google Plus, especially because I know Greg and I and Joe and Walt are all very active on Google Plus. So if you're looking for somebody to follow, go for it.
Walt needs to change his share settings, though. He always shares everything privately.
I know. I've been beating him up.
I don't understand why he does that. Just set it to public by default and get it over with.
It's not like he's sharing anything really private, right?
I know.
I mean, he shared with me some really cool Transformer pictures, and I'm like, dude, why did you do that privately? Share that publicly, man. I
know.
Like, the world needs to see these pictures. They were that cool. He's the Walt. Anyways, you can check out what we're up to in our other work. It's only Greg and I tonight, so I'm only going to talk about what I'm playing now, which, Greg's doing with that other guy that isn't here.
He went to PAX, jerk.
He went to PAX with his wife. Again, let's just harp on again. Who takes their wife to PAX, really?
So he sent me a text message saying that she got claustrophobic after being drunk and had to go sit off the side. When they were in line at PAX, I'm like, really?
Anyways, let's not pick on our friend's wife.
She's going to kill us.
She is. She's going to kill you because I haven't said a damn thing.
Okay.
Greg and Joe are doing what I'm playing now is the other thing they're doing. So go check out what they're doing video game wise. You guys have been doing some cool live play, watch us play type things, which it's fun to laugh at you when you're doing that. Not that I could do any better because I absolutely suck ass at playing
games. Oh, my God. The one I did for Donkey Kong Country 2 was, that was so bad. I got made fun of so bad for that one.
You probably deserved it. Yeah. Anyways, I have this other little thing that I'm doing, which is why I'm doing DevOps Days. I'm doing this thing called DevOpsMastery.com, and I'm trying to be super duper cool, write articles about DevOps and what DevOps really is, which is another reason why this article really set me off. Because I pretty defensive of DevOps. I think people have DevOps wrong in a lot of cases, but you'd have to go read the other website to find out why. And listen to the other podcast that I'm doing there with Mr. Jason DiDonato, who will possibly be, we might have Jason as a guest on the next podcast. Depends on when he gets his butt over here next Tuesday.
Oh, he's actually coming over to your house.
Yeah, we got to record some DevOps Mastery podcasts. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You guys do all of them once and then just stagger.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they're not timely, so I can do the stories ahead of time. We tried doing one without the story. That didn't work as well. Those are under 30 minutes. They're all under 30 minutes. They're somewhere between 15 and 30.
I don't think we're ever going to hit that.
I don't think so either, but we got to try. It's a goal. It's a goal.
It's a New Year's resolution.
It might be a New Year's resolution for next year, too. But.
We can make the Christmas one a half hour. Cause we'll
Yeah. So, all right. What should everybody go do, Greg? Because you're the only other one on here.
Oh, thanks. You install Linux, install Fedora. You know, that's the only one that matters. So,
install Ubuntu.
Oh, okay. Install Ubuntu.
No, you're saying install Fedora. I'm saying install Ubuntu I want people to install Mint. Linux Mint Mate. I'm hearing a lot about that. I may have to go install that this week. I don't know.
I know. I've seen a lot of buzz about that one. I have to check it out. They're throwing a VM.
Yep. So, all right. I am out of here, and so is Greg. Have a good week, everybody.
See ya.
This has been a production of LinuxInstall.net. All original content produced in this podcast is released under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License. Please feel free to redistribute it to your friends.